Welcome to the Break It Till You Make It podcast. My name is Frank Farrell, and I'll be your host. I'm also the author of the thesis by the same name.
So I have with me Andrew Duff, and Andrew is a creative director, and he wears many different hats. He is also the founder, and he runs his own business called Collective Gasp. Is that right, Andrew?
That is correct. Yes, it's a it's all my corporate design clients and some nonprofits too. But that's specifically all design related, user experience, user interface, web. excuse me. And that whole business actually started out with live event design as well.
Okay.
And I've branched out since then. Yeah, but it's collectivegasp.com.
Yeah, and
Andrew,
yeah, please do. and Andrew has been heavily involved and, like, you know, volunteering his time to actually have many maker events in the city. And he's the creative director of the current Maker Festival in Toronto and the Unconference that was recently held at the Ontario Science Center. And
yes.
I was at that Unconference, the first Unconference I ever attended in my life. So that was a really interesting and exciting thing. Andrew, if you could just tell us a little bit of how you got involved in, you know, the Maker Festival and then becoming the creative director and then, you know, leading all of these events.
Sure. Well, I first became aware of the whole Maker movement back in, I think it was 2013. When I was, I actually had a gallery exhibition that I was preparing. It was a gallery show of collage and paintings that I had done. And for that show, I wanted to have this installation piece in the gallery that was a bunch of clouds that I'd made out of paper mache, and I wanted to have LED lights in them.
Oh yeah, I've seen your work. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Oh, great, thanks.
Yeah.
So I wanted LED lights because, you know, it was rice paper that I was using for these clouds, and I didn't want the lights to be hot, but I wanted them to be nice and bright. And so I was going around to different suppliers of LED lights. And I wanted to talk to them about this and for this installation. And they were like, oh, wow, are you gonna hook them up to a Raspberry Pi? And I'm like, oh, what? What is that?
Yeah.
And I just kept hearing it over and over. Oh,
yeah.
Are you gonna hook it up to a Raspberry Pi? Oh, are you gonna hook it up to an Arduino? And I had absolutely no idea what they were talking about. And a couple of them said, well, you should go and check out the Maker Fair.
Yeah.
And so at the time it was the Toronto Mini Maker Fair. And so I was like, well, this sounds really exciting. So I started looking into Raspberry Pis.
What year was that? Do you remember?
That was 2013.
Okay.
2013.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So there was, I think it was the second generation maybe of Raspberry Pis that was coming out or had just come out. And so there was lots of information about it. And I was blown away by these microcomputers, what they could do, and also how cheap they were. And at the time, both of my kids were in elementary school. And I thought, oh, my God, this would be great to have like a Raspberry Pi club or something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this community that I live in is a real mixed community. You know, there's people who have a lot and people who don't have a lot.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this would be great for everybody, for accessibility, you know, inexpensive. $45 at the time was how much one of these units cost. And I thought this would be an amazing club. So I went to the Maker Festival, excuse me, the Maker Fair, as it was known. And it was at Wychwood Barns in the West End at St. Clair and Oakwood, or, you know, just west of Bathurst.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And I went there with my son, and he was however old he was then. He was pretty young, like 6 or 7.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And we were blown away. And I went to that event thinking, well, I'm going to learn more about Raspberry Pi so that I can maybe pitch this idea of a Raspberry Pi club to the school. Yeah. And then I saw this event and I was blown away. All the different learning experiences that were happening there, all the different kinds of vendors and the, people selling stuff, but also just people showing the crazy contraptions that they were making. And there was just this real element of play and learning through play that just was amazing. And I quickly got rid of the idea of the Raspberry Pi Club and thought, what about bringing something like a Maker Faire to the school, but on a real smaller scale.
Wow, that was like right away. Like you didn't even pause.
Yeah. No, right away. I was just like, this has to happen. But how do I do it? Yeah. And so, to make a long story a little bit shorter, I ended up chatting with people that I knew who were involved with the parent council at my kid's school, and they didn't really understand what I was the event that I was talking about.
Yeah.
But they saw my enthusiasm and said, you know what, if you have an idea for a fundraiser or a community event that you feel strongly about, join the parent council and pitch your idea.
Yeah.
That's the best way to make it happen. And so I did. I joined the following September. I joined the parent council, pitched my idea. And again, to make a long story short, they were like, we don't understand what you're talking about, but your enthusiasm is there. And we get the idea of the STEM connection and making technology accessible to our whole community. So we love this idea. And I had more meetings with the principal to kind of refine the idea, to make it less about fundraising and more about community outreach and bringing in members of the community, either parents who have their kids going to the school or just people who live in the area where the school is, to bring in their projects and things that they're working on and showcase it. And we'll all, make it a real play, learn, interactive experience. And go ahead.
No, I'm just like, you're saying it like, you're making a long story short, but there was a lot of work involved in
oh my gosh,
reading in all these people, because I remember attending this and there were a lot of people there, a lot of projects there, a lot of volunteers, and there's a whole bunch of logistics for one person to actually coordinate. And I bet you were learning a lot of things along the way, actually what this technology was all about. I mean, you were not a tech person, if I could say so. And
that's right.
And you were learning.
Oh, tons of learning. Yeah. I didn't really consider myself a maker in the sense of what the maker movement is now or was really at the time, which was really electronics based and science based.
Yeah.
I consider myself a visual artist and a designer. I make pictures, and either those pictures stay still or I make them move in the digital sense, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of electronics and building little computers or robots or any of that kind of stuff, I felt I knew very little.
Yeah.
But I knew I understood that it was the way that the maker movement was forming or had formed at that time was that it was very low end. It was very cheap and do it yourself. So it was it was people getting components on their own, and it was very hobby oriented.
Driven, yeah. Right?
Yeah. And so it was people doing this stuff on their own at home and sharing. So there was a lot of do it yourself and a lot of knowledge sharing that was going on. Right. Yeah. So they would post videos on, hey, I did this thing and it blew up. And then I tried it again and it didn't blow up. So let me show you the video of all of that experience.
Yeah.
And, then there was all these websites started appearing with instructions, instructables and all that kind of stuff was appearing and there was just so much going on, and yet still so many people didn't know about this. And the opportunities for kids and the opportunities for families who really didn't have a lot of money to throw around, to have their kids and themselves too get involved with this was, I could see, you know, an amazing opportunity. And so, yes, you're right. It was, I'm really condensing the story here, but there was a lot that went on in terms of getting people, you know, having the idea, pitching it to the parent council and the principal, and having the principal say, you know what, this is a great idea, put a team together and organize this, and then turning to you know, the other parents that I knew, and at first it was dads. You know, I reached out to the group of dads because, you know, I recognized that the moms were already doing a whole lot of stuff, like, oh my gosh, like that place was held together by the moms. And so I thought, well, here's an opportunity to get some dads involved. And that's what happened. It was me and five other dads. And we would meet at a restaurant just down the street and plan this all out. And some of them had live event experience as well, which really helped. And we divided and conquered, right? We set up set up this team, who was going to do what, and we decided on what kind of makers we were going to reach out to. And I turned to the Toronto Mini Maker Faire website and blatantly poached as many makers off of their website as I could. And I wrote the organizers of the Mini Maker Faire and asked them if it was okay. And I didn't want them to sue me and all that kind of stuff. And and they were wonderful. They wrote back. Eric Boyd, one of the organizers, wrote back, sent me an email and said, not only are we not going to sue you, but we want to really encourage you into doing this. And if you get actually pull it together, we want to be involved as well. We'll come to your event and be one of the exhibitors. And that's what ended up happening.
And that's what I found when I went to the unconference, that everybody was so supportive. I mean, everybody has a sense of camaraderie, like, you know, we're all in this together. Yeah. And that was very encouraging, you know. I mean, I was like an outsider coming in, right? I hadn't been involved with the community. I have ideas. I love making. I also had difficulty identifying as a maker, because I also come from an artist, and now I am making, but I couldn't call myself like a technology maker, or I'm making some like high tech gadgetry or whatever, right? Like, you know,
right.
But I felt like it was very inclusive, and it was very warm in some ways. Like, you know, everybody's being like authentic, like they're just being saying it as it is, right? Like, you know, and that's something I really appreciate.
Yes.
And
And that's something that it seems my internet connection is unstable. Are you seeing me okay?
I am seeing you.
Am I still here? Okay.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to agree with you on the fact that that collaboration and that sense of community, that was one of my big things that I learned through the process of putting together that first Make It Fair at my kid's school at Beaumont, was how welcoming and collaborative, open to collaboration and welcoming to the community that the Toronto maker scene was. They were very excited about the event, and the makers that I reached out to were like, yeah, this sounds great. We, you know, another opportunity to reach out to potential makers and show them their stuff. A lot of them were just, they weren't selling anything. They just wanted to show their projects and talk about them. And then, you know, there were also some makers that were selling stuff, but that was really cool too. It gave an opportunity for the real amateur makers who were just tinkering around to see where it could go and get inspired by those more professional makers.
Yeah.
And then there were, you know, kids involved too, who were inspired by the grown-ups there, who were making projects a little bit more intense, or not intense, but more difficult than what they were.
Yeah.
And so there was just all of this, you know, back and forth that was happening, and, you know, having the more professional makers inspiring the kids, it really moved those makers as well. And, you know, there was lots of, oh my God, this was so amazing. I hope you do this again. It's a different feel than the big maker festival.
Yeah.
It was really cool to get involved, and the principals were just blown away by this too. And we had visiting principals coming from other schools and other, really getting excited about it and wanting to, know how to get that happening at their schools as well. And I was, you know, I got all the information for free, so I was happy to share all the information for free.
Yeah.
And, we got, started getting a little bit of a buzz going on, and it was really good. Yeah.
So like you what happened after that? Because I think you didn't continue doing that. Like, you know, you moved on to, you did, take over the Toronto Maker Fair. And how did that happen? I mean, a transition or?
Sort of. It was a transition. So yeah. We cobbled together that first Make It Fair at my kid's school at Beaumont here in the East End.
Yeah.
And then I led that initiative for four more years. So I think I did it for a total of 5 years.
Yeah.
And then I just, I stepped back from it this year. And 2 years ago, I saw that Maker Festival. So it went from the Toronto Mini Maker Fair, and it became the Maker Festival Toronto. And they put out a call for help to join their organizing team. And I was just so grateful for all the help that they had provided for 3 years.
Yeah.
That I was like, you know what? You guys are so awesome. I want to, because our event was in the spring, their event was in the summer. So by the time their event came around, I was done.
Yeah.
With the school one. And so I said, hey, I'm available. I'd love to help. I'll take tickets. I'll sweep floors, whatever you want.
Yeah.
I just am so thankful for you guys and your support. And they were like, no, we don't want you sweeping floors. We want you to help with the organizing team.
Okay.
So I joined their core team and started helping with workshop and with spectacles as well, the larger installations. And then their, at the time, creative director moved away.
Yeah.
Left the city. And there was some other movement going on within the core team. And they asked me, well, would you like to move into this role?
Yeah.
And I said, actually, I'd like that role.
Yeah.
the creative director role sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And would bring in my skills with communications and marketing and all of that.
Yeah.
And it just felt like a more rounded out experience for me. And so that's how I moved into that role. And I did that role for a year, and then I found it was really quite a meaty role. And I felt that I had done my time with the Beaumont Make It Fair.
Yeah.
And I wanted to open it up so that other parents would have that experience as well.
Do you know of any other schools that have taken it on and actually done something with it?
Well,
or any other communities?
Sure.
Yeah.
And so during the time I was with the Beaumont Make It Fair, I worked closely with parents at a neighboring school at Duke of Connaught.
Okay.
And they got their Make It Fair going, which they had going for a couple of years. But then also in the process of running our event, I met other other parents who were running maker fairs at their schools. And we talked and shared tips and tricks. And
Is there somewhere that like people listening to this podcast would be like, oh, I would like to do this in my school. Like, is there somebody they could approach? Could they approach you? Or like, you know, is there a resource in Toronto that they can go to?
Yeah. And that's something else that I've done through Maker Festival is that, you know, when people email our general email about getting something going at their school, it's often sent to my attention. Okay. And then I get in touch with them and chat with them. I've met with parent groups several times over coffee and just basically spilled my guts on how I did it. And they just take, you know, are madly taking notes on what to do. And there's been some successes. It's been really great.
Okay,
and,
great.
I met with also on a grander scale. I met with some people at the Mississauga Library. Met them at the Central Library and chatted with them about how to set up their own event as well. And did the same thing. I met with a group of four people and just went, okay, first of all, you look at this, and then second, you try this, and then third, you need to figure this out. And just gave them the whole plan. But again, it's the nature of the community of gathering that knowledge and then sharing it out again so that this experience can be a shared one and is accessible to as many people as possible.
And I know you did the UnConference recently at the Ontario Science Center. And how is that different now? Like, you know, I know that's for like the core people involved in the maker community and things like that. But that had a real community feel to it too, right? Like, you know, everybody came who was involved in the community, and I got to learn a lot about the insights of the maker community and the maker festival, like, you know, how things operated, like the hardships that people were having dealing with making in the city sometimes, and like, you know, the high rents then and the places, you know, to actually set up workshops sometimes in residential areas are a real problem because, you know, neighbors get, you know. But one of the things that I really wanted to touch upon was, you know, we spoke about at least in the group I was in, we spoke about safety and like, because I'm dealing with kids, I spoke about like, you know, kids not having a central place that I can use to actually find resources to teach kids about safety during making events, you know?
Yes.
And I think, you know, I come to this from a personal kind of story where my son, basically, he went to.
So I'm here with Andre. Andre is now, how old are you, Andre?
11 years old.
Yeah, Andre is 11 now, but when he was around 7, we went to the Maker Fair and he had a little incident happen. Andre, you want to tell us what you remember?
What happened was I went to the Maker Fair. Some kid taught me, I think they were around like 12 to 13, but when they gave me a soldering iron to solder, I held it like a pencil and I touched the part that was metal and was heating up, so I got burned.
And what happened after that? What did we, how did, I was there at the time, but do you remember what happened after that? Like,
they had to pour water all over my hands and put bandages and stuff.
And he got like second degree burns on his fingers, and I was like, oh my gosh. Like, and nobody knew, I mean, how to react to it because we were all doing it together, right?
Sure.
But I just took him to the washroom and like got, but like things like that, like, you know, what is your experience with like training volunteers on that front end?
Right. Well, training the volunteers is a big thing. And I know that with Maker Festival, that is a high priority. Yeah. And it, you know, the space that we do the learn to solder tutorials is very popular.
Yeah.
And can get very very tight because there's, you know, lots of people walking through there and all that kind of stuff. But the volunteers that we have, to my knowledge, are well-trained people,
yeah,
and are trying the best, especially when it comes to kids.
Yeah.
Again, my understanding is that when there's kids involved, that the parent is there, because usually it's a one-on-one experience.
Exactly.
With the soldering, right? You have the volunteer who's showing how, and then there's the adult who's, you know, one adult to yeah. one volunteer showing how to do it. But when there's a child involved, it's normally the parent
yeah.
who sits with them and along with the volunteer, so that there's that extra set of eyes and hands to make sure that it goes more smoothly.
Yeah.
But, you know, anytime you're using something that's hot, like a soldering iron, which is incredibly hot, or hot glue guns or anything like that,
yeah.
And little hands and little fingers, it needs to be extra careful. So yeah, it's a challenge.
It's a challenge. And yeah, that's what I found. I couldn't find a central repository of like information. Like this is how you would address children with safety issues. I mean, there is a lot of ad hoc information right. spread on the web, but you know, it's yep. been a challenge for me in that sense. And
well, one thing I'd like to say about that. And that came out of the UN conference, which you mentioned before,
yes.
was to back up a little bit. The whole reason that we decided to have the UN conference was because of the state of the community.
Okay.
So when we came up with the idea, Maker Festival had canceled because of venue issues,
okay.
and Make Magazine was going broke. And the Maker Fairs that they sponsor and coordinate were also going broke and closing down. And Maker Spaces, you know, all over the country were either shutting down or on the verge of shutting down because of high rents and other issues, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where we were coming from.
Yeah.
And through the process of setting up the UN conference and then holding the UN conference, we learned that making, you know, the whole maker movement
yeah.
was transforming. And so it was transforming and becoming established in K-12 schools, in wow. universities and colleges. And yeah. so the education industry was really where it was being reborn or transformed. And it was, wow, really amazing and really exciting to learn about. And so to go back to your question about safety
yeah.
Protocols with children, I think in the beginnings of the Maker movement, it was very much centered around adults, right? Even yeah. though everything we do at Maker Festival, kids love it. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Kids love it. Families love it.
Yeah.
But, you know, our thinking is that it's not really, we don't think of it as a kids event.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's a bunch of adults doing stuff, but
exactly.
kids love it. And so now the safety protocols are very much keeping everybody safe, okay? I want to make that very, very clear.
Yeah, I know.
The idea
yeah.
is to make everyone safe.
Yeah.
But that being said, it has a lot of the projects and the initiatives were very for grown-ups, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
now it's moving into this different area, this new realm
yeah.
where it's really blossoming. You know, not only with again K-12 schools that are integrating these lessons into their curriculum,
yeah,
and developing their own maker spaces, but also the boom in all of these private schools and courses, as you were mentioning before,
yeah,
such as, you know, STEAM labs, you know, going into more educational for kids and young adults programming,
yeah.
and lots of other groups like Maker Kids that offer their own specific programming geared towards kids,
yeah,
and scientists in the schools and all that kind of stuff, that it's all moving in there. So without a doubt, as that gets more and more ingrained, all of those protocols, all those issues are going to be addressed really, really well.
Yeah, I'm hoping for that. I mean, I know the Ontario Science Center, I mean, even Kevin was talking about like the initiatives at the Science Center to actually bring making, like they do have making there, but they really want to integrate it now, like even more into the Science Center, and like,
yes,
talking about, yeah, new projects that they were thinking about. And it was really exciting.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, you can already, it's kind of an aside, but already you can find hot glue guns that the temperature is regulated so that it's not as hot.
Yeah.
But it still does the job, but it's not as dangerous for kids.
Yeah.
And I can see other other equipment that maker spaces use being more accommodating to kids, you know, maybe soldering irons that are lower temperatures. You can already adjust soldering irons to different temperatures, the more expensive ones. But I can see that broadening, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and already too, I also do some artists in the classroom work through the TDSB. It's another thing that I do. And my experience in some schools that have makerspaces in middle schools, you know, in elementary schools that are K-8, and they have modified makerspaces with equipment that's designed more for smaller hands and aren't quite as intense.
Yeah,
but still do the job.
And that was one of the other things that I think it was the EdTech group. They have a conference on educational technology. I forget his name, but they're TDSP teachers, and they were talking about not having a central repository of all of the great stuff that all of the schools are doing. I mean, all of them are doing it in silos, and they don't have a TDSB. Right. Central hub where they can go and like, you know, get this information, unless they network, right, among each other, right? And I hope over time that actually happens. TDSB sees the value in this and actually has.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, there are efforts in the works. I know that up at George Vanier Secondary School. There's an instructor there, Victor, who is working very hard to develop his setup, his makerspace, as a hub for the northern Toronto schools.
Yeah,
I was chatting with him, and he was saying that. It seems like a lot of makerspaces and a lot of maker community initiatives are downtown.
Yeah.
And he really wanted to have something more in the north end of the city, which is where George Vanier Secondary is, which is up at Don Valley and Shepherd. Don Mills, excuse me.
Yeah.
Don Mills and Shepherd. So they're just north of there, and they have a great setup up there. And so he's really... hoping to make connections and bring awareness to their facilities so that that can be made more available to North End schools.
And that's exactly where I'm coming from, because I live in Scarborough, and like in Scarborough, there's, I don't know if any makerspaces around here. And, you know, right, all of the tool library and everything was, is now it's moved downtown. It used to be, I think, near Don Lands, I think, before. And I would really love to see, the maker movement actually, actually have a community space around Scarborough that kids could access. And, it's quite different having a maker space and a maker space which is accessible to kids. And I don't know of many which are accessible to kids right now. And that's something I would really like to see evolve.
I agree with you. And there are, Toronto Public Library has their digital hubs.
Yeah.
and you know, they're really great. But they are, you know, it's something that's, it'd be great if there were more of them, right?
Yeah.
And those digital hubs are really more geared towards digital, right? 3D yeah. printers.
It's more digital fabrication and
yeah.
and things like that, right? And you can make yeah. a little 3D print of something in 2 hours if you can, but.
That's right. Whereas yeah. the real full-on makerspaces have the woodworking studio.
And, yeah.
And all that kind of stuff as well for more rigorous prototyping, I guess you could say.
And also, like you know, as a dad, like yourself and me as a dad, I would just like to go and hang around in a space where I can actually have my kids around with me and just teach them the things about tools, about materials sure. and things like that, right? Because, like, you know, my own journey as a maker through this through these few months have been, like, even a mundane thing like a drill, like, you know, electric drill can really hurt you if you don't know what you're doing, like, you know.
Exactly. Yep.
And I was terrible at DIY. I just say that I was terrible, and yeah. I am now. I'm not great, but I'm so much better. And just through my whole journey through OCAD and being in a makerspace where people showed me, okay, this is what it actually does. This is what, like, when you put it in wood, this is the screw you need because
yes.
you know this is the texture of the wood, or this is like the grain yeah. of the wood. Like simple things, but when
right.
when you're given context, yes. I was like, oh my God, no wonder you know my wood was cracking. Like, you know, and I think
right, right.
It just feels a sense of empowerment to give kids these experiences, like, and then like I keep encouraging them to make stuff, because this whole project, like, even now that they're stuck at home, like, he's been making like things with cardboard and gluing them together and things like that, and like that
yep.
I think
yep.
there's so much of value, like that's what you saw, I think, when you first went to the first Maker Faire, you saw these projects and you're like, there's so much of learning in that. That's the first thing you said. And I just look like,
oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It read that because
yeah, yeah.
I think that's, you already see the value in that, you know, that project-based learning, like, that's embedded in this kind of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the idea of accessibility too, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that word, I mean, in the broadest sense, right? Not only for people who, you know, accessible for those who, maybe don't have the funds in order to have their own makerspace at their own house,
yeah.
but also for people who don't see themselves as making things,
yeah.
you know, it's accessible, right? It's this thing that is not a great mystery, right? And, you know, you can learn about it. You can be okay with going into this space and making mistakes. No one's going to judge you, right?
Yeah.
And as long as, you know, you are aware of the safety, and of course, these makerspaces that I've gone to,
yeah.
they all, you know, safety first, right? You learn
yeah.
the safe way of dealing with these tools, and then it's explore with them. You know, let's make some stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're, you know, you learn by doing. Right, you
yeah.
get in there and get your hands dirty, and it's a fantastic thing, and again, you thinking about other materials in terms of prototyping and all that stuff
yeah.
too, right? From Lego to cardboard to, you know, maybe just using hand tools to build
yeah.
something, and then building up the complexity. And it being all part of the journey is, yeah, it's fantastic.
I love your enthusiasm, Andrew, and I can't thank you enough for, you know, spending this time with me and, you know, actually, you know, talking about this, because I think,
yeah.
you know, it's really important that people hear it from a person who's been so ingrained in this community and actually, you know, really loves this stuff. I mean, I know you just love it, and
I do.
I hope people can feel encouraged that they can approach you, you know, and
oh, absolutely,
and take this further and actually engage with the community even more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would encourage anyone who has any questions or wants to know about putting on their own. Maker event, or even what types of makerspaces to get involved with, or any other questions, to email me, andrew@makerfestival.ca is my email address that they can reach me at. And I'd be more than happy to chat with them via email, meet up for coffee, whatever. Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you, Andrew. And that brings us to the end of our podcast with Andrew Duff. Please check out his website, and we will be recording a new episode with Maz and Omid Itiadi next. Thank you.